cults over here.
Cults over there.
There are cults
everywhere.
And we're going to tell you all about it with a fairy tale twist.
Welcome to
Once Upon a Cult.
Once upon a time, there was a man who took the old Once Upon a Time stories and revamped them and made them into these iconic films and movies and characters and kind of just made it his own. And then his legacy lives on past his death. And his company is still taking these Once Upon a Times and making them into new Once Upon a Times, exposing us to new characters. That's right. We're talking Disney today.
And they even have a TV show called Once Upon a Time.
What? So we thought we'd do something maybe a little bit different in light of birthday, Disney's 100th birthday, the company. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they started in 1923. Mm-hmm. So we thought we'd look at Disney through the lens of why is this company, these theme parks, why are they held in such a high esteem? For example, if you go to Universal Studios, let's say, you're going to see a ton of people wearing Disney clothes. Mm-hmm. If you go to Disneyland, you are not going to see a ton of people wearing Universal Studios. But when you do see some with a Universal Studios jacket on, you're going to be like, ugh, they wore that here.
Yeah, you look down upon them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, why is Disney held to higher esteem and is it a cult?
Yeah.
Is it becoming a cult? Has it become a cult? Are there cult-like aspects at play? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I guess, spoiler alert, Alan and I are Disney adults. We're total Disney nerds, but we can still look at ourselves through this lens.
I mean, yeah, if you ever listen to our other podcast, Marvelous Galaxy Disney, you know.
I didn't want to tell them we had that podcast. So we thought as Disney insiders, we're like the perfect candidates to look at it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think there's talk. Like, I don't think this is something new in the world that people haven't thought of. There's definitely a lot of like TikToks and other stuff out there that, you know, I would say a lot of them kind of jokingly say Disney's a cult. But, you know, being that we are a cult podcast, we do want to examine this.
Yeah. And we thought since this isn't, you know, like a traditional cult that mm-hmm. people would look at, we thought that we'd break it down through different sections. So we're going to take our cabos, our tenets, charismatic leader, alienation, belief system, outside evil, and sense of community. And we're going to break them down one by one and just talk about everything that goes under that umbrella.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is going to be fun. I think it's going to be enlightening. Mm-hmm. A little lighter episode after we had to talk about Miss Shamblin.
Yeah.
Okay, to start off, why don't we talk a little bit about the man, the myth, the legend. So Walt Disney himself was born December 5th, 1901. So he started off the 20th century.
He did.
Yeah. He was born Walter Elias Disney. He did have his brother Roy Disney. At 18, he became a commercial illustrator. He then moved to California in the 1920s, where him and his brother Roy set up the Disney Brothers Studio. And then they kind of partnered up with Ub Iwerks, who famously drew Steamboat Willie, which became Mickey Mouse. Some people are highly contested about this since he really doesn't get a lot of the credit. Disney gets a lot of the credit for Mickey Mouse. By 1937, the studio did their first full-length movie, which was Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. So in between when the studio started in the 20s in 1937, they were doing, you know, shorts, the Silly Symphonies. And he went on to pass away in December 15th, 1966. He was 65 years old. But before he passed, he did start Disneyland in 1955 in Anaheim, California. And everybody thought this man was cray. They were like, you can't expect people to pay to come into this land. Mm-hmm. They were right. who's going to pay a lot of money to go into a protected area with lots of cool rides?
I don't know. I can't think of anyone.
So, and then, of course, it just grew from there. Like, they kept adding, you know, Disney World, Disney Paris, and it's the huge conglomerate that we know today that you either love or hate, or you hate to love or love to hate. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, any company isn't perfect, but we still love the merch and the product.
Yeah. I mean, Mickey Mouse, he's, like, one of the most recognizable characters or brands, you know, around the world. So he's created a huge empire.
Exactly. So I think that's a good starting point for a charismatic leader. So should we get into that?
Yeah.
So why do you think Mickey Mouse has become this just global phenomenon?
I mean, I just think he's so relatable. Like, there's nothing that you could, like, hate about him, I guess. Like, he's just such, like, a positive character that you don't ever see him. You don't feel sad anytime you see him. You know, he kind of cheers you up in a way.
Yeah, except for that one time where he, like, kisses Minnie against her will, no consent, in the old Silly Symphony. Mm-hmm. Jesse and I were watching that at the park, and we were like, ew, Mickey, ew. But no, you're right. He's a simple design. He's, like, he's everywhere.
Yeah.
No matter what you like, you've been exposed to Mickey Mouse.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think where they were smart too is Disney has surrounded him with these other characters. So if you don't love Mickey, you love Minnie or Donald or Daisy or Goofy.
Yeah, there's like a character for anybody in like part of the Fab Five.
Yeah. And one thing that we talked about is the man himself, Walt Disney. So what do you think it is about Disney that has inspired these people to follow him and to live out his dream?
I mean, like, looking back at all of his footage that he's been in, Walt Disney, like, he is very charismatic. Like, I don't know, to me, he's very, like, he's like a Mr. Rogers. Like, you just trust him in a way to be in your, like, household, or just, like, you know, the nice, very fatherly, like, in my opinion. Like, he's just, I don't know, he just seems like a really nice guy that you want to, like, almost like be your dad, you know?
Yeah, I could see that. I could see, now that you mention it, like, Mickey is very similar to Walt Disney.
Yeah.
In that they're both just so, like, inspiring, and they just want people around them. Mm-hmm. People want to be around them.
Yeah, like, I just remember, because we went, you'll listen to more about this if you listen to our other podcast, Once Upon a Cult. I mean, sorry, Marvel's Galaxy of Disney.
Out today!
But we went to watch the new World of Color, and at the end they had Walt Disney, like, a clip of a speech that he had. And it was just very, like, warm, like, after watching the whole show, and you're just hyped up, and then all of a sudden you hear Walt Disney in the end, and just, like, his voice is very, like, soothing, and it just was a nice closing to it. And I'm just like, wow, this man is just so amazing.
Yeah. And I think for our generation, anyone after Walt died, in fact, like, we almost probably what's the word, like, we hold him on this untouchable pedestal, because we never really saw him alive, except for in these videos where you're not gonna see if he does have a bad side.
Yeah.
He's not gonna be like, I'm a jerk.
I mean, and I don't, forgive me if I'm like, if I haven't come across it, but I've never, like, of being so many years, like, I haven't seen any documentaries about, like, Walt being like a jerk.
Yeah, no, you know? I haven't either.
You're yeah. Right. So I hope that just speaks to how good of a man he was. I mean, there is that rumor that he is a Nazi sympathizer, apparently. I don't know if you heard about that rumor.
I heard about it in college,
because
they talked about how there's animations of, like, Chip and Dale in the Nazi army. And, like, that sounds bad by today's standards, but, I mean, just to qualify it a little bit, apparently he was very attracted to the ideals of Hitler, mm-hmm. until he found out what Hitler was doing to the Jewish community.
Okay.
Yeah, once he found out, like, oh, this man is straight up, like, torturing and killing people, Disney and the company pulled back. But, I mean, Hitler rose to power for a reason.
mm-hmm.
because he did have attractive ideals, whether they were racist or not, for that day. So that's, I'm not completely defending Disney, but like once he found out the hurt was going on, he backed out.
Yeah, which is good.
It's interesting though, right here, I am reading a little bit about playwright Robert E. Sherwood and how he described Disney off the camera.
Okay.
It's not what you think.
Mm.
He says that Disney was almost painfully shy, diffident. So apparently wow. he just was very bashful. He was very like embarrassed. It's funny because he seems so sure of himself.
Yeah.
When he's on camera. So he's a good faker.
Yeah. Well, I like that quality too in someone that could be in power like he is, to have that balance or that humbleness, you know, to know that, you know, you're not a god.
Yeah.
You know, so I do like that in someone in his type of role.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, when I'm having this thought, I'm looking directly at a popcorn bucket you bought with Walt Disney on it, mm-hmm. thinking of like, we're only exposed to images or the yeah. statue of him holding Mickey Mouse's hand or people dressing like him. So it's interesting that we've only seen videos of him, but we still hold him in such high regards and we still dress like him and we still yeah. talk about him. So our generation still is in love with this man yeah. who died in 66.
I do wonder, thinking about that now, like if he were to come back to life and see how he is depicted, about like, oh, there's like a statue of me in the park, like I wonder if he'll like be bashful about it or not, you know?
Yeah, yeah, I've always wondered that, like what would he think of the park today? Would yeah. he be like, oh, this is my ideal, you grew it? Or would he be like, I fucking hate this,
there's alcohol here,
get me out of here. Another thing we discussed in Charismatic Leader is you don't really hear about who's in charge of, you know, like Universal Studios.
Yeah.
And you don't hear who's in charge of Magic Mountain. And you don't hear who's in charge of Knott's Berry Farm. But, like, Josh D'Amaro is a big name that a lot of us know, especially even above him, Bob Iger and Bob Chapek.
Mm-hmm.
So it's crazy to me that, like, Disney is so large that we even talk about the management and how they're going to manage things.
Yeah. I mean, they were in the parks the other day, and they were, like, the social media that went on treated them as if they were celebrities in the park. Like, there are people following them around, whereas I feel that the whoever the president is of Universal Studios were to walk around, people would think, like, oh, that's just someone that works here.
Yeah, and one thing when we were at the park yesterday, Friday, is I was telling you while we were on Splash Mountain, somebody even recognized Imagineers yeah. themselves on Splash Mountain and took video of them riding the ride.
Yeah.
So, like, there's that much love for this park that people know the names of the actors in the rides. They know the Imagineers. They know a lot. There's even TikTokers and bloggers who people know of because of their coverage of Disney. Mm-hmm. You don't see that with other theme parks.
No, not as much. Yeah, like people have kind of took advantage now of Disney to like align them with a brand and like raise up their status, especially on social media.
Yeah.
For influencers.
So I wonder, like, what is Disney doing that? I would say the next after Disney, in my opinion, is Universal Studios.
Mm-hmm.
So what is yeah. Disney doing that Universal Studios isn't?
Well, I think, too, Disney is kind of concise in terms of, like, their media that comes, like, because you do link Disney with the movies that they've done. And it is just a direct correlation because it's like, this movie is by Disney, whereas, like, Universal Studios, you have, like, Fast and Furious. You don't immediately, like, when that movie first came out, think of Universal Studios.
True.
And I mean, I guess the closest thing now that they have is Illuminations, but even then, like, you don't think that every Illumination movie that comes out is going to have an attraction tied to it.
That's a very good point.
Yeah. And that's the thing too, because people, especially admit Disney movies, like, that's your childhood, and that's, you get so, they do a great job in connecting their audiences to their stories. So when they go to Disney, it just brings that connection closer into life, you know?
Yeah, that's true, and I'm not embarrassed to admit this. One of my moves when I would meet a new guy would, I don't do that anymore because I'm with you. ask them who their Disney prince is.
Yeah, you did ask me that before.
Because it's something that I feel like, especially in the queer community, we're all familiar with. So that's like a really easy question to get a idea of, okay, what kind of guy is this guy into? What kind of Disney movies does he like? You know, we can spark conversation off of who you pick. Yours was Prince Eric.
It is kind of like, yeah, like when you ask someone like what your sign is.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the same thing.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Do you remember who mine is?
Yours is Aladdin.
You did it. So I do want you to put that in your back pocket, comparing the movies, because I have that down here too for another thing that we'll talk about later.
Okay.
Did you have anything else you wanted to bring up in Charismatic Leader?
No, I mean, yeah, I think Disney does a good job, well, especially recently, of just like creating great characters that people can relate to. And it's that, again, like just connects people to you and can bring people in a cult-like way.
Yeah, and we definitely have, you know, a list of examples here of people who can be considered charismatic leaders within Disney, whether you're looking to the Mouse Ears, you're looking to Iger, to Walt Disney. I mean, we didn't talk about him, but even if you're looking at Marvel, and why can't I think of his name?
Feige?
Kevin Feige. Uh-huh. Or even, I mean, I guess a little of a deeper cut, but Kathleen Kennedy for Star Wars. Like, we know exactly who's in charge for every franchise under Disney, which is a little crazy.
Yeah.
When you think of Pixar, you think of John Lasseter until he got in trouble. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you don't really know, like, who's in charge of Illumination.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Or do you, I hate to say, but or do you care?
Yeah.
For the most part.
So yeah, I guess Disney has done a really good job with their properties of making sure that we have a face to every franchise, to the point where like the Feige robot, the K-E-V-I-N, was in She-Hulk. Like, he's transcended into being part of the MCU and being a robot. That's insane.
Yeah. Yeah, like DC, I don't know.
Yeah. All right, so let's go ahead and move on to our next. Let's go to Alienation.
Okay.
So one of the things that you brought up that I thought was interesting, can you talk about your theory of kind of like a superiority?
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, we kind of talked about it earlier, but I feel, I mean, this might be a bit biased, but like I think a lot of people out there can think that Disney is the superior theme park across all the other theme park companies out there. And in a way it is kind of just like, you just, if someone were to come to me and say like, oh, Universal is my favorite park, apologies if it is, I do kind of like question your thought process of what a theme park should be, because like, I don't know, like, Disney just does great with what they do, and like I'm gonna kind of show my theme park nerdiness, but like Universal, just the technology and just the type of rides that they have, like it's all screen based rides for the most part. That's just not innovation for me. So that's kind of where I get kind of biased and kind of would probably alienate myself from that person because like I don't, you're not seen at my, you're not eye to eye at my level in terms of like theme park qualityness. I mean, you're still fine. Like, I'll go to Universal with you if you want, but like, to me, like Disney is great, especially because like there's so many parks out there and so many great rides. So yeah, that's, it is kind of a bit of like a, what's the right word? It's like superiority complex. Is that a thing?
Yeah. No, that's a thing.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. You kind of want to align yourself with something awesome. So when you see like someone liking something that's not cool, like you're like, okay, you have your opinion, but it's wrong.
I would like to qualify what Alan just said with the fact that we do have Universal Studios.
We
passes.
Do. Yeah, we do. And
we do go.
Yeah. And again, we are in California, so we are comparing like Universal Studios Hollywood to Disneyland, where like Universal is like a smaller park. So yeah, like it might be a different story if we were in Orlando. Probably not. But yeah.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I don't think I would judge somebody if Universal is their favorite park, because we do know someone in Florida who loves Universal and does not love Disney, mm-hmm. because of the price difference and because of the treatment that they received. But I get what you mean. I have a coworker who, quote unquote, hates Disney, hates Disneyland, mm-hmm. but he's never been.
Yeah.
And I judge him off of that.
Yeah. And that's the thing, too. It's like, I would question, like, why would you not like Disney over, like Universal over Disney? And yeah, it seems like a lot of it is more like personal versus like the quality of the rides. I don't know. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, it does come down to treatment, I think. Because especially with Disney under JPEG, a lot of people were really turned off to Disneyland. So
I mean, I get it as well. Like, some people also might not be able to go to Disney, even for a year. Like, tickets are expensive. They are, and that is kind of like cult like too, where like for the diehard fans, they're giving all their wealth, all their money that we see a lot in cults, to Disney, and they're kind of like stuck, like they can't go anywhere
and one article compared going to Disneyland like almost like a tithe to a church or to a cult. You're paying all this money into this bigger leadership, basically. It's a big company. So that's a really interesting comparison. One thing, and I'll give an example for this one, but we talked about cliques forming around Disney. I mean, one thing that I can think of directly is last year, 2022, we went to a Disney dance night. And I feel like even that, some people are like, oh, that's awesome. And some people are like, you're a fucking adult. Like, why are you dancing to cartoon songs?
Yeah.
And even there, like, you could really get a sense of the generation difference, because we're fucking old. And a lot of people there were, like, 20s. And, like, they would play, like, Hannah Montana or High School Musical, and that crowd would go crazy. And then they'd play, like, sometimes older stuff, and our little crowd would go crazy. So even within the generations, Disney means something different to each person.
Yeah. Even then, like, thinking of the dance party, it is very worshipy, like, you know, in a way.
Yeah.
Because everyone is just, like, chanting the lyrics to the song, and I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, probably if I was an outsider, I would be like, oh, my gosh, this is kind of culty.
Yeah, when you really think about it, even though there's no, like, so I'm thinking more of, like, RuPaul, for example. Mm-hmm. If you get really into RuPaul, you kind of start speaking a certain way. You start speaking in drag queen language. And we've even seen it get so big that now I am tired of people saying, what's the tea? What's the tea? Like, that's just what we say now. It's not even a drag thing anymore.
Yeah.
And you even hear, like, on the news now, I've heard people say, like, oh, he was throwing shade. And that used to be just a drag queen thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's cool that we're, like, bringing their language over. But at the same time, it's, like, overused. I bring that up to say, you can tell who's watching RuPaul based on how they talk. Mm-hmm. Even though Disney doesn't really have any words or language that specifically goes with it, you do have a certain type of conversation you can have with people who are familiar with Disney versus people who aren't.
Yeah, I actually, that reminded me of a TikTok, because there was someone that was like, if you are a Disneyland or Disneyland Anaheim fan, This is what you need to know, what the rides that we refer them to is. Like, for instance, Rise of the Resistance, we call it Rise, you know, and then we have the Cars Land ride. We'll probably call it like Cars, or it's actually Radiator Springs Racers, but we'll call it Cars. And then, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, Mission Breakout, we just shorten it to Guardians. So there are like certain names that we kind of rename things. I'm still trying to figure out the new ride that we just got, Mickey and Minnie's Runway Railway. Like, what are we going to call it? Are we going to call it Mickey's Ride? Are we going to call it the Railway Ride? You know? So there are these like little things that we don't think of, that, yeah, just come to us, because it is also like, we don't want to say the full name of the ride, because it's a tongue twister sometimes.
Well, and a lot of times people even don't say Space Mountain. They say, do you want to go to space?
Yeah. Yeah. I want to go space, or, oh, Star Tours. Is, oh, or Buzz. Buzz Lightyear. Buzz. Like, we'll just say Buzz. Yeah.
And actually, I was just thinking about this. I just came to me while you were talking, but our other podcast, Marvelous Galaxy of Disney, every Monday, somebody was listening to it for the first time. Hi, Aaron. And Aaron would message me and be like, for the most part, I understand what you guys are talking about, but what's DTD?
Yeah.
What's DCA?
Yeah.
What's WDW?
Yeah, all of that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Orlando has similar like things too that they say.
Oh, by the way, anybody, if you don't know, DTD is Downtown Disney.
Yeah.
DCA is Disney's California Adventure, and WDW is Walt Disney World.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, I don't even think about it. A lot of times I'll be like, do you want to go to DTD? And they'll be like, what's that?
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. Growing up, that's what made me think of it, is I grew up in Placentia, which is right next to Anaheim. And it's all language that growing up, everybody around me knew, because we were very familiar with Disneyland and everything around it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you didn't grow up around Disney or in Anaheim, then you wouldn't necessarily always know all these things. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it does have its own language, which is also kind of culty.
It is.
I put this next one as part of alienation, and it's not this way so much anymore. But I remember we have a close friend who works for Disney. They worked for Disney at a certain point in our life and then quit, got some other jobs, and then went back to Disney. All that to say, if you're not aware, Disney employees get access to what's called Company D, which is an offsite building in Anaheim. It used to be in this like warehouse, so... like there's a front part, which is the store part, and then you go through almost like if you're at Sam's Club or Costco, I'd say it's closer to that, where in the back there's just like this whole warehouse full of boxes that have stuffed animals and all this crazy stuff in it. The reason I bring this up under alienation is it used to be the idea that if you work for Disney, we've all heard the stories, you don't get paid a lot working for Disney. Usually a minimum wage or maybe a little bit more. The idea behind Company D was, yeah, we're not paying our workers as much, but they also have access to really low cost, high quality food, goods, services sometimes, like discounts on hotels or cruises. So it got... to me, very culty. I used to go and get this whole thing of like turkey and cheese slices that they use in the park. So it's like quality. And it was like $2 for a whole like huge pack of it. I used to get the sourdough bread they use. We used to make like turkey melts with it. Like it was so good. So just that idea though of, we're going to pay you less, but you have access to special things and we can take care of you with, you know, cheaper food and drink. It really does tie you to the park as an employee.
Yeah, because they're probably like, well, I can't get nice things like, or free food, like, not free food, but cheap food like this if I were to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate that they don't do that anymore. I wish they did.
I know. Yeah, they took it away when they moved Company D. So they don't have food anymore. They still have cheaper items,
yeah,
which we go to town on.
Yeah. Thanks, Victoria.
Thanks, Victoria. So, yeah, that's another kind of – it blurs a line to me between alienation and sense of community, but it is making me more dependable on the park.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else in alienation?
I think we covered it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Belief system.
The mouse.
The mouse.
The House of Mouse. He's the boss. I mean, even when you talk to cast members, you're like, oh, like the mouse wants this. Or like they even though there's no physical mouse, that's is their boss. Like, that's their excuse.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, even small things when you think about it. And I was just exposed to this the other day. Anytime you see somebody point with two fingers, you know exactly where they worked or work still.
Yeah.
It's a very Disneyland thing. Like, if you're not aware, Disneyland holds the belief that pointing with one finger can look rude. So they'll always point with their index and middle finger together.
Also some cultures too see that as offensive. So it's kind of the safe thing to do, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, just the other day someone was directing me and they pointed with two fingers and then he laughed at himself and said, yeah, I worked at Disney. So it's almost like when you go to Chick-fil-A and they say, my pleasure.
Yeah.
Like that's a very Chick-fil-A belief.
Yeah. I mean, also cast members say like, hey, friends, instead of like saying, hey, guys, like it's they're like, hey, friends, do you know this area's closed? They refer themselves as cast members instead of employees of Disneyland because it's supposed to be a production that they're portraying to the guests.
Yeah.
They're trying to, you know, help deliver the magic. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the friends thing, it's not just Disney. When I was working COVID testing at school, schools do that now too.
Oh, wow.
It's more so just a movement to take away genders.
Mm.
But I like that.
Yeah.
And one thing that you brought up you want to put in belief system is urban legends.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot, I would say, that people talk about. So I won't cover everything. But, like, I think the big ones are, like, Walt Disney, apparently people think that his head is frozen somewhere because Disney felt that he wanted to stay as alive as long as he did. And that when he was diagnosed with his illness, he wanted to freeze his body so that when time comes to or freeze his head so that when time comes to for like a cure of his illness, he'll be thawed out and they'll cure him. That's one. And then also there's people believe that you can't die on Disney property. If you get injured, they're going to move you off of property so that you don't die or your death certificate doesn't say that you were deceased on Disney property.
Yeah, there's been a lot of rumors about like Disney not calling a death if somebody dies in the park until they get them out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
So I... That one, to me, almost transcends urban legend. We've seen examples of it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I know what you mean. So, yeah, a lot of beliefs around that. One other thing, too, that I think can come off as maybe a little culty, but also very magical. When Disney built the park, he wanted to make sure that you can't see out of the park. He wanted you to be fully immersed in the experience and not see any streetlights, any signs. So the park is purposefully built up so that you really can't see outside. That goes just for Disneyland at this point. California Adventure or DCA, savvy listeners. DCA, you can see outside. They didn't really uphold that so much for DCA. They wanted a different feel. But yeah.
Yeah. I think that goes with the immersiveness too, because even Disney tries to, they call it like sight lines where they try to make sure you're not seeing, they do their best anyways that you're not seeing any other type of park. So say, or side of the park. So say if you're at like, they do a great job at Galaxy's Edge, like you don't see Matterhorn when you're inside that land, just so that you're not like taken out from the experience. But yeah, again, it's like the whole idea of just you being transported into the park, kind of escaping real life.
Yeah, and speaking from personal experience, but also from, you know, testimonies online, a lot of people do get fully immersed in the park, to where I was going through losing a job. My friend who was working for the, or is still working for the company, was jobless at that point. So, like, that was our happy place.
Yeah.
We would go to Disney or DCA. We would sometimes just buy, like, alcohol and dance at the Electronica Festival, which was Tron-themed. We had our favorites. We loved going on Splash Mountain and the Rapids. Like, it really does transport you to another place, to where you start to build up, like, this is how I feel at Disney.
Mm-hmm.
So then you almost get an addiction.
Yeah.
Because that's where you like to be to feel a certain way.
Yeah. And that is kind of like relating back to cult. Like sometimes people find Disney because they're in like their low, like in a low part of how they're feeling. So they go to Disney to feel better. And, you know, that is a tactic of cult sometimes, is to bring people who might be lost or, you know, might need help, bring them in because they're more susceptible to be staying in the cult. So in a way that is kind of, I mean, Disney doesn't actively go out and like grab people and take them into the park. But
I wish they did that. That would save a lot of money.
But yeah, I mean, that's, in a way, it's almost kind of like that where, yeah, you're going somewhere because you're looking for help or you're looking to kind of cheer up.
Yeah, and even lately, like, exploring more of kind of my they side. I'm like, he, they. I enjoy sometimes throwing in, like, feminine-type clothes or purses or whatnot. And I feel safer doing that at Disneyland than anywhere else because I know Disney has similar values to me. I know if anybody says anything, like, the Disney cast members are going to protect me. Mm-hmm. I know that it is very queer-friendly because of the workers, because of the park-goers. It's a queer-friendly safe space. So, like, even beyond just how it makes you feel, just the way the park is, it is very inviting by them saying friend, by them taking away a lot of the gender identity on, like, Star Tours, for example. Most of the paths now say, like, you have to get them to safety or you have to get them to the rebels. Mm-hmm. So it is interesting how even just these little things can make us feel like this is where I can completely be myself. Yeah. Just like a lot of times a cult invites you in that way under the guise of, like, you know, if you think of Jamestown or Jonestown, with Jim Jones was all about, you know, identity and being who you are, and that's how he got people to come to this colony that he set up. All right, did you have anything under belief system, anything else?
Belief system, I mean, I think it is also the you kind of use Disney or going to Disney as the excuse to, like, believe that there is magic out there. Like, you can pretend that, like, oh, Tinkerbell flying over the castle, like, you can play around and be like, oh, that's, like, really Tinkerbell. Like, there's this where, like, I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, when you go to Disney to kind of believe in things that you wish were true or wish were, like, a bit more magical in the real life, you know?
Yeah, and even thinking to some of the rides like Mickey Minnie's Runaway Railway or to Rise of the Resistance, kind of the genius of the way the Imagineers, like, set up the, I guess, I'm trying to be careful to not spoil anything for anyone, but the magic of what goes on just in the line even.
Yeah.
Like, it's fun to walk through those lines with someone for the first time and kind of explain to them how they do certain things. People on many occasions have even asked, like, was that the ride? And you're like, no, we just got through the line. This is for the ride now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it does transport you to believing you're in the middle of this event.
Yeah. And again, the cast members, too, like, do a great job in doing that, especially, like, with Rise. Like, some of the cast members, because you are, hopefully this isn't a spoiler, but you're taken prison, so you're almost kind of treated like a prisoner.
Yeah.
they're not all nice to you like they are in the, you know, outside in the other rides. So yeah, like, and again, I think that goes with the cast members believing in their role as well too.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't do that if you weren't, you know, if you didn't like Disney.
Well, and I'm sure it's fun for them, too. They get to pretend they're in Star Wars.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's the whole thing, the whole spiel, the whole atmosphere. All right, Outside Evil. So I did want to bring this back up in Outside Evil. The way people talk, the Disney movies, in my opinion, are the standard for animation. Like, for example, when The Bad Guys came out, one of our friends wrote, like, this is better than any Disney movie. Mm-hmm. Or, like, some people will be like, oh, it's not Disney, I don't want to see it. Or, like, it's almost like it's not as good because it's not Disney Pixar.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe that. Because, like, Disney is almost like the seal of approval. If you just put that sticker on a movie, you're like, okay, it's a Disney movie, so I know I should be able to expect this and get that delivered.
Yeah, and even, like, for example, Strange World came out in November of last year, and people are like, this is not the Disney standard. This is not what I expected from Disney. I expected better.
Yeah.
Even though it's a great movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just wanted to throw that in there. And even on the opposite side, one of our friends is a little upset, for example, that Anastasia is now under the Disney umbrella.
Yeah.
Because it was created as almost like an anti-Disney movie because the creator didn't want to work for Disney. So he left and made his own studio. And now everything from that studio is now back under Disney because of the Fox acquisition.
Yeah.
So both sides, like Disney is like we said earlier, a love it or hate it company.
Yeah, it is. I mean, yeah, because you can say that like on the opposite end where like, oh, this is Disney, I don't want to see it, because like, especially nowadays, it's all about like, oh, Disney's too woke. So like, oh, this is going to be about like woke things that I don't care about,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it is, I guess you can even say it is kind of like polarizing, whether you're a fan or not.
Yeah. And even like, I think of Frozen and how, oversaturated we all were with Frozen.
Yeah,
like I almost think people are kind of turned off by Frozen now. Like, for example, in World of Color, which we'll talk more about on our other show, they didn't have any Frozen in there.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I'm probably the group that like I don't care about Frozen as much anymore. So yeah, because yeah, that's the thing too, like when Disney makes a hit, it gets played out so much.
Yeah.
Like Bruno.
I mean, oh, my God.
Although I don't mind the song, but I'm actually, I'm surprised they don't use it as much. But yeah, sometimes you can get kind of like played out with Disney.
Yeah. And for another example, the same coworker who hates Disneyland, who's never been, he has a daughter. I think she's 6, I want to say. He told her, he asked her, like, do you want to watch Frozen? And you know what she responded?
What?
Fuck Elsa.
Wow. I wonder where she got that from.
Right. Like, that's so bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, even like some kids, like they just got tired of the hype behind it. And I think that's why we see like not as much Frozen anymore.
Yeah. Well, you make a good point too. Now, I feel like nowadays, because Disney, and I feel like we're probably going to talk about like Disney adults and a lot of stuff, but I feel like a lot of people, their degree of being a Disney fan is also how they were raised. Like I feel like a lot of parents who were Disney fans, their kids are going to be Disney fans as well too. I'm probably an outlier because my parents aren't. I don't even know how I got into Disney, but yeah, I think it's also like that nostalgia, and just because it does, Disney in a way like can bring families together when they're all sitting together and watching a movie, you know?
Yeah, and that's very true. That's why I connect with two of my aunts the way I do, because mm-hmm. we would sit around and watch a lot of Disney. Like one of my first memories of going to the theater when I was 5 was seeing Little Mermaid with my mom and grandma and thinking my grandma was like Ursula. So yeah, it does get into our psyche and kind of like sit there rent free.
Yeah.
Until, you know, we're an adult, we have all these memories. Like Little Mermaid, no matter what, is always my movie because of those memories of seeing it so young.
Mm-hmm.
And even though Aladdin is just ink on paper, he's hot. He's not wearing a shirt. Get it? So, yeah, we have an emotional connection to certain movies, certain friends, like especially in high school, going to El Capitan with Rachel and Stephanie mm-hmm. and seeing the latest Disney movies, like everybody's favorite, The Emperor's New Groove, or Treasure Planet.
You said everyone's favorite?
Everyone's favorite. Okay. Yeah. No, I know. Even me, like Treasure Planet's not the easiest. Atlantis.
Everyone, you say?
Shut up. So, yeah. Another thing that I've noticed, this happened to me twice going into the parks, either security or even at the front gate. I have a shirt I designed on Threadless, magichavoc.threadless.com, and it's the Jurassic Park symbol, but I made the skeleton look more like Sauron from X-Men, and it says Savage Land instead of Jurassic Park. So I was wearing that, I was walking through security, and a guy pointed it out and said, "You won't find that right here." And I think another time I wore that shirt and somebody said, "You won't find any dinosaurs here." And it's like, I know. Like,
yeah.
I haven't told one of the guys, like, no, this is X-Men. Like, I'm representing X-Men and Jurassic Park right now. So it does belong.
And then he got kicked out.
And then, yeah. And then my pass got taken away. But even that kind of, I don't know, it kind of rubs me the wrong way. Because, yeah. like, if I want to wear Jurassic Park, whether it's related to X-Men or not, I should be able to wear that because I like it.
Yeah, it's there is a bit of, like, elitism you can probably that you see at the park. And I think, like, just kind of talking with Universal or talking or thinking about, like, Universal a bit, they kind of use that to their advantage because a lot of times they'll kind of troll Disney with things.
Yeah.
I can't think of an example right now, but, like, just, I don't know, like, I'm spinning one out right now. Say, like, in the media, like, there's a huge line for one of their new rides, and then Universal will come up and be like, hey, like, there's no lines here. Come over here. Like, things like that. Universal is very clever. I would applaud their social media department on that. But, yeah, like, Disney is just... Yeah, you don't see anything like that at Universal Studios where if you were to wear like Mickey ears or something, like the employees over there don't care.
yeah, like I just wore my Mickey sweatshirt in there just last week, and you see a lot of people wearing Disney to Universal, and it's not a problem. But it, like, especially if you go with Alan to Disneyland and you wear something Universal, he's like, that doesn't belong here.
It doesn't. But so, yeah, and I guess you can relate it to, like, I don't know, like, I don't know if what I don't know how the church would feel, like a Christian church would feel if you wear like a pagan system symbol at the church, you know?
Yeah,
I guess I mean that's probably to the extreme, but that's kind of how I see it in terms of just like religion anyways to that. It is almost religious the way they kind of like see people wear other stuff outside of Disney.
Yeah. Did you use that example because I'm wearing my pentacle right now?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, outside evil, is there anything else you could think of?
Aside from, like, outside merch at Disney. I mean, there are... Well, I don't know if it's, like... I mean, it is kind of, like, just the ante of... Disney fan, but there are a lot of Disney haters out there. Mm-hmm. And I think that is because of like how kind of, I don't want to say cult like, but I guess like, yeah, cult like, or just like how we are, is that there are going to be haters too.
Yeah.
And that can kind of cause some like alienation between, outside evils, you know, because you just kind of want to steer away from them, the haters.
Yeah, no, it's true. And that is a big problem. I feel like in the last few years, Disney adults have really been under fire for like, you're immature, or you're wasting your money, you're under their spell. But at a certain point, it's just that's what I enjoy. And I feel like a lot of people have certain things that you could say is a waste. Like, I mean, if you're someone who likes to go to bars and clubs, you're spending a lot of money on alcohol probably when you can get a lot of that at home, you know, for much cheaper. But it's the atmosphere. You go because you like being in mesh. You like being around people. I mean, drinking by yourself isn't fun. Yeah. And then same with, like, if you're a sports fan and you're going to sports games, you can watch that on TV. But there's, I mean, for me especially, I'm not a huge sports person, but I will go to an actual game and watch it because it's very different than watching it on TV.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think we all have our vices are things that we could mock other people for liking, but I mean, Disney just happens to be ours.
Yeah. And it's like, we're not really harming anybody by being a Disney fan. So it is like, I'm not here to like defend anyone, but like, it is interesting how much hate Disney adults do get online for just liking something that they like, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right, the last of our tenets is sense of community. I feel like we have a lot here, but a lot of it kind of goes hand in hand. One thing I wanted to really bring up as the biggest thing for sense of community, there are two circular puffs that usually go on a band or a hat, and you wear it on your head. Think of how many people you see in the park with Mickey ears.
Yeah.
And how many just crazy designs there are now. Like, I can't even guess. Like, there's got to be millions, right?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot. And, like, even like, not sold at the parks, there's some that you can just find on Etsy.
Yeah.
Like, the designs are endless. And, yeah, people go to the parks just to kind of show off in a way, you know?
Some people even have a whole wall where all their ears are on display.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that.
No.
Okay, I have one. But, yeah, I mean, nowhere else, no other theme park, I guess I should say, but you don't go to Universal and everybody has, like, uniform ears or uniform hats.
Yeah.
Like, they have stuff. They have pins. They have hats you can buy, but, like, you go to Disneyland, and there's even jokes getting on the ride, like, oh, these little ears or these little guys.
Yeah.
On, like, Star Tours or Soarin', rides like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think a lot of people do it, too, because, like, it is kind of going back, like, to what we talked about before about just, like, kind of showing your creativity, because there are a lot of creative people out there that just make ears or make other stuff of Disney. That, you know, if they wear it out to outside of the park, like, either people are going to look at them weird or they won't get, like, any, like, compliments on it, where you'll get a lot of compliments at Disney. You'll get, like, if you wear something unique at Disney, there will be people that'll be like, oh, like, that looks cool. Where'd you get it? You know? So, mm-hmm. And that sometimes makes you feel good.
Well, and I think what Disney does to people who go in, cause I'll see, like, adult straight men wearing, like, ridiculous hats or ears, like, it encourages you to, like, feed into your child side. And yeah, you can be whatever you want. You know, if I'm wearing a purse and a bow ears on my head, like, nobody's gonna say anything because, you know, 100 other guys there are doing the same thing.
Yeah.
If I'm wearing, like, a stupid looking goofy hat, that's great. Somebody's going to compliment you on it or ask you where you got it, because we are there to be kids and celebrate these movies and rides. And I feel like other parks don't give you that sense of childlike wonder like Disney does.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if I buy as much merch at Universal, like, I don't think I'd buy, I like Jurassic Park, but I'm not going to buy a Jurassic Park sweater.
Yeah.
Because, and that's the thing, too. I think the reason why, especially, like, for me, I buy a lot of Disney, like, clothes and apparel. But I come into the mindset of, like, I'm going to buy this, but I'm probably just going to be wearing this at Disney. And not so much, like, outside. Like, if I didn't have a pass, I don't know if I'd have as much Disney attire than I do. Because it is fun to kind of, like, be all Disneyed out and go to the park, because it is kind of like when you go to a sporting event and you root for a certain team, like, you're going to go all decked out in that team's, you know, branding, because you want to, like, fit in and be kind of in that community of a sports team. And that's kind of the way Disney is as well.
Yeah. And even on yesterday, the 27th, when we went for the opening of Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway, it's also the beginning of the Disney 100 year celebration. I can't tell you how many people were either wearing the 100, like, lavender colors. Uh-huh. And if they weren't wearing that, they were wearing, like, a spirit jersey, which, if you're not familiar, spirit jerseys are kind of like sports jerseys.
Yeah.
To celebrate different aspects of the parks or media. People were like, oh, I got this one in Shanghai. I got this one in Paris. I got this at Aulani. So it's like a status thing, too, for people to wear all that to the park to show, like, this is the level of my fandom. I'm willing to go pay a bunch of money to go to different parts of the world that are Disney.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's I kind of wish we knew what we did yesterday in terms of what people wore, because I might have changed a little bit
and
wore something a little different, because like, everyone else got the memo to wear lavender and to wear all their Disney 100, so I was just excited to go on the ride and wear my Runaway Railway spare jersey.
I think you did better than me. I was wearing a gay Star Wars jersey.
That's true.
So yeah, even from that aspect, like, there's almost unspoken dress code. Like, you show your fandom through wearing your spirit jersey, or you show your fandom through wearing your ears. But not only that, you show your fandom through what type of spirit jersey are you wearing, what type of ears are you wearing.
Yeah.
Did you buy them in the park? Was it made somewhere else? I've even seen a Sanderson's sister spirit jersey that was homemade once. It said Sanderson across the shoulders.
Yeah. And I guess even thinking about that, like walking around the park, sometimes I do get kind of, not biased, but I guess like typecast of the people I see. Like, oh, if I see you decked out in Disney stuff, especially like recent Disney like attire, you're probably a magic key holder, versus like someone who's not so much into Disney, wearing Disney stuff, or just like wearing like the Captain America sweater or something. Like, oh, you're probably just here for the day.
Yeah, no, I get it. You can really spot like who has a magic key and who doesn't. I wonder if people think we have magic keys.
I don't think it's obvious.
Another big thing with the parks, beyond like even just thinking of for Gay Days, you were red. Like, yeah. There's all these like rules that go with Disney that we don't have so much at other parks. But we do actually have also the upper echelon are like the different aspects. Like, are you a D23 member?
Yeah. Yeah. And that, oh my gosh, like, I mean, I don't know if I'm skipping ahead, but just thinking there's D23 in general and the expo, like, that's very culty.
Yeah.
Like, just going there as an exclusive member. Well, not exclusive members, but like we go to all these like talks and it's just Disney kind of preaching to us and we just applaud, especially like going to things like the Marvel or the Marvel and Lucasfilms one, or just the attractions. Like, it's just kind of Disney flexing their power, and we just kind of like cheer at everything that they do. I'm just like, oh my gosh, it's culty.
Yeah. And especially too, like, we talked about this on our other show, but we went to Mickey's at Glendale because we are D23 members and we got invited to an exclusive store only for the Imagineers. And yeah, you got your spirit jersey there that you could only get there. I got my Muppets one that you could only get there. So then now you're like, oh, they have access to this thing that other people don't have access to. So now you're elevated in the community. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Yeah, because you do. I mean, everyone, I think, wants to be that Disney super fan. So you try to kind of almost one up each other sometimes, or compare like what magic key tier level are you? Do you get free parking? Or yeah, are you also a D23 member? Are you a Disney Vacation Club member? Like, there's just so much that you can buy into at Disney and to kind of like set yourself apart.
Yeah. And even just your friend and her coworkers came and visited twice now, and like I got this special kind of high of being able to like guide them through the park. Like, I loved being their guide. I loved their experience of like going on certain rides for the first time. Like, mm-hmm. You get to be like elevated in that way too.
Yeah, because it is a special feeling. Like, it's almost like being a cast member where you're kind of adding to someone's magic.
Yeah,
for the day. I mean, I've also heard stories of people, not even cast members, just people like hiding little gifts in the park and like posting on social media. Like, I think that's a nice thing about our community, is that we do kind of like to help other people at the park have a special day as well too.
Yeah. Another thing, another aspect that is communal and a little culty is social clubs. Mm-hmm. So basically the idea is, if you want to strengthen your social circle, or if you don't have a social circle and want to gain one, you can actually join different clubs that go throughout the park. A lot of times they wear their club image. Like, they'll have a jean jacket and you can sew the patches on the back. One of my favorite ones is named after a band I love. They're Tigger Army. After Tiger Army. Uh-huh. I was actually part of one of these social clubs I first met Alan.
Yeah.
But yeah, this has come under fire because there's rumors that like gangs will fight with each other. They're gangs. But like, there is one disagreement between two clubs once.
Oh, geez.
But that's even like, you know, an elevation too, like, what club are you in? Oh, these are my people. There could be different pins or patches made and given out, so people will actually look for club members throughout the parks and like try to collect these things, sometimes for free, sometimes for a cost. I haven't really seen them since COVID though.
Yeah, no. I, well, Yeah, no, I don't. I wonder if they probably just disbanded because of COVID and they weren't able to successfully come back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's another small aspect. I mean, for the workers, I think something we see a lot of times in cults that we do see at Disney is Disney would only give my friend like 34 hours, let's say. So that way they don't have to have her full time. They don't have to give her benefits. They were paying her very low, but there was so much manual overtime. So she's even like, you should come work here. I make so much more money on overtime, getting time and a half, this and that. I'm like, but look at how much you're being worked.
Yeah.
That's very similar to in cults. They, you know, would overwork a lot of their members to keep them kind of tired, kind of compliant, kind of like dependent on the bigger entity. So it just seems like that model seems a little purposeful to me.
And I wonder too, I feel like this is probably amongst a lot of cast members, but like, I wonder if they sell it like you, but you get more hours to work at the happiest place on earth, to work at somewhere that you love, you know?
Yeah.
So that's probably like one of the big selling points.
Well, and we were told by our friend that a lot of people don't work for Disney because the pay, shocking. They work there for the benefits because now they can sign friends and family into the park. They get discounts, and they're pretty heavy discounts sometimes.
Uh-huh.
Like November through January, they get like 40% off merchandise. Yeah. They get access to the store. There's special events like Minnie's Moonlight Madness where like you can form a little group and do a scavenger hunt in the park, which I got to do once so long ago, and it was so much fun. So it's definitely very much like, we're going to work you hard, but we're going to play hard too, I think is the mentality.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that was everything I had.
Yeah, I think that's it. Are we going to talk about whether or not we think it's a cult?
Of course we are. That's the whole point of this show. What do you think?
I don't like to think that it is a cult. I also don't think that it is because, like, I think just coming from someone who has, I mean, you as well, like, talked about other cults, I don't think it is because we have the freedom to escape. I feel like we could leave whenever we want to, but we don't because we're super fans. but no, I mean, like, yeah, I do like Disney a lot, but I feel like I can also step away whenever I feel like it. And I kind of feel like I'm a delusional cult member for saying that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, I feel like a lot of the points that we touched upon were like soft things, nothing that was too concrete to say like, oh yes, this is a cult.
Yeah, I would say the part that concerns me the most with Disney is the treatment of the employees.
Uh-huh.
I think that's the part that is dangerously close to like it could be conceived as a cult only because of the bad treatment. I think outside of that, though, like, you're right. Like, we choose to have a magic key. We choose to buy stuff whenever we go, whether we want to or not. But that apple cup is so beautiful. It's purple and silver. It's the poison apple. I had to have it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we do choose this stuff. And we go there because it makes us feel a certain way. And we enjoy, you know, living this life and, you know, getting outside and walking for what's included in our membership, basically. But it's not forced upon us. It's just very well marketed to the point where we have a certain status because we have a magic key and because we like the movies and the merchandise.
Yeah. The merch, though, is so good.
I know. No other park will you see huge lines for certain things. Or people selling it on eBay for huge prices. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think this is a cult. I think it's interesting to look at it through the lens of is it a cult? And I think it has a lot of aspects that are similar to what we see as cults. But this could also just be a benign cult.
True. I guess one thing that I was, like, just thinking to myself as like a determiner of being a cult is like if Disney, God forbid, if Disney were to move to another state, I don't know if I'd follow it.
Oh.
You know? Like I will visit probably like once or twice a year, but I don't think I'd move there just for the park.
That's true. I don't think I'd move either.
Yeah.
I love California.
Yeah, I think we're just like fortunate because we're here. We happen to be in SoCal and close to Disney. But yeah, it'd be sad, but that's probably where I'd become a Universal Studios fan.
Aww.
No, but yeah, I think if I were to move somewhere because of a theme park or because of a Disney move, then that's kind of culty.
Yeah, and I think what a lot of people are talking about, which also kind of sparked this idea, is the Disney like community being set up near Palm Springs.
Oh yeah,
a lot of people are like, "This is the start of it. This is a commune dedicated directly towards Disney."
Yeah, which I would consider moving to.
I know. But yeah, that does bring up interesting questions. Like, would it get culty in there? Because I'm sure if you're living in a Disney commune and if you don't like Disney, you're going to be looked at a certain way.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, people are going to be talking about, you know, who their favorite princess is, what prince they want to fuck, and like all that kind of stuff. And there's going to be judgments because of it. So something like that could get very culty, I think.
Yeah. The sub cult of Aladdin.
Yeah. Oh, I'm still gonna leave that. Come on, everybody, we're going on a magic carpet ride. Oh, so yeah, I think it can, the love and fervor in which people have for Disney, including ourselves, like it could turn you very culty very fast, especially if you're surrounded by people who have that same fervor you did.
Yeah. And hopefully, because I think it's also dependent on the leader too, right? I think we've had good, well, we have a good leader, Bob Iger, but like I feel like if someone were to take the reins that wanted to be like a Jim Jones or something, I think, I don't know, like they could, I think it depends on the leader too, which Bob Iger, he's more of a businessman. I don't think he would be that type of person to do that.
Yeah, and like you made a good point, like talking about leadership, when Chapek was in charge, a lot of people were hating on Disney.
Yeah.
And then Iger came back in. We have our charismatic leader again. Yeah. And now a lot of things are getting fixed. A lot of people have a better outlook at Disney.
Yeah. So that does matter.
Yeah. Well, cool. I'm glad that we can keep being Disney fans without being in a cult.
Yeah. I mean, although if there was a Disney cult, I can't deny the fact that, or I can't say it's impossible for me to not join it.
I mean, the social clubs are like a stone's throw away from being a cult, so.
Yeah, I'm in the cult of D23.
Yeah, and especially because cult now, a lot of people don't even see it as like a scientific word anymore, because anything can be labeled a cult. Because cults aren't always just bad. They're just like a group of people all sharing a same idea or belief.
Yeah.
Like you could even say the social clubs themselves are small, benign cults, and all it takes is for one member to be like, hey, do you want to pay $60 for patches, and then you never get your patches because of COVID. Real life story.
Yeah.
And then they start, you know, sleeping with everybody in the social club. Now it's become a dangerous cult. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's very easy to go from just a club to a cult.
Yeah, I can see that.
Mm-hmm. Well, cool. I feel good about our episode. I think we brought up a lot of interesting points.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, if you are a Disney fan or have any thoughts about Disney being a cult, like, let us know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Write us in on Instagram, our email, onceuponacult@gmail.com. We really want your thoughts. Is there anything you don't agree with or agree with? Do you think we're crazy for being Disney adults? Are we assholes for loving Disney?
Yeah.
Do you just miss Rachel? She'll actually probably be back next episode, actually. She's coming back to the States, so that'll be fun.
That will be fun. We'll do one more before we leave the country.
Leave the country to go to Disney Paris. Yeah. Cool. So we've got 8 more episodes this season for you, and then that'll be our countdown to 100, actually.
Yeah, we're doing our own 100 celebration. We're doing our own 100.
So also let us know if there's any last-minute cults you want us to look into in our last 8 episodes.
Yeah.
Cool. And where can people find us if they haven't heard enough throughout this episode?
Well, I don't think they know yet, but you can also find us on Marvelous Galaxy of Disney, where we talk about Disney, Marvel, Star Wars, news of the week, and other things.
Yeah. And you can find me on Solving for X with Kevin, where we actually just got through the Dark Phoenix saga with awesome guests on every single episode, thanks to Mr. Kevin. And one of them was me, my cousin. And you can also find me on Words of the Witches, where we're going through season 9, the comic books from Charmed.
Nice.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
We should talk about the Charmed cults there.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there are.
I'm sure. All right. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Bye-bye.